Hello. Welcome. I don't have my headphones on. Hold on. Hi, I'm back. I have my headphones now. How are you? I'm tired. What's going on? You guys look great. You actually, like, today you smell really good. Normally you're fair. You know, it's decent. It's not bad. Sometimes I could tell you just got out of work. But hello. Welcome to the show. It's Tomic Radio Hour, episode 305. My name is Vince. You look fantastic as usual. A lot of things to talk about today. But we got to start off the show with a little piece of sadder news, something a little more underwhelming, frustrating even, and that's that Microsoft has closed down a bunch of studios that are under Bethesda. Now, Kyle sent me this tweet from Shinobi602 on Twitter, and it's an IGN article. It's saying that Microsoft closes Redfall developer Arkane Austin, Hi-Fi Rush developers Tango Gameworks, and more in devastating cuts at Bethesda, staff told via email. This is written by a Wesley Yin Poole. The studios of Arkane Austin, Alpha Dog Studios, Tango Gameworks, Roundhouse Games are all being affected by this. I'm going to read the email, presumably. That's what I thought it was when I read it. I'll be reading you the email that IGN has posted here. The article starts off with, Microsoft has closed off a number of Bethesda studios, including Redfall maker Arkane, Austin, Hi-Fi Rush, and Evil Within developers Tango Gameworks, and more in devastating cuts at Bethesda, IGN can confirm. Alpha Dog, makers of mobile game Mighty Doom, will also close. Roundhouse Studios will be absorbed by the Elder Scrolls Online developer ZeniMax Online Studios. Microsoft is currently valued at over $3 trillion. Did not say how many staff will lose their jobs, but significant layoffs are inevitable. You've probably seen on Twitter, this is not from the article, this is from me. You've probably seen on Twitter all of these studios tweeting. They all had kind of like the same image, like here's Arkane's that says today it was announced that Arkane Austin will close and development will not continue on Redfall. These just quick little PR messages that they put out. Quote, in an email sent by Matt Booty, head of Xbox Game Studios, Microsoft blamed the cuts on reprioritizing of titles and resources. The email verified by IGN is as below. Today I'm sharing changes we are making to our Bethesda and ZeniMax teams. These changes are grounded in prioritizing high-impact titles and further investing in Bethesda's portfolio of blockbuster games and beloved worlds which many of you have nurtured over the decades. To double down on these franchises and invest to build new ones requires us to look across the business to identify the opportunities that are best positioned for success. This reprioritization of titles and resources means a few teams will be realigned to others and that some of our colleagues will be leaving us. Here are some changes coming into effect. Arkane Austin, the studio will close with some members joining other studios to work on projects across Bethesda. Arkane Austin has a history of making impactful and innovative games, and it is a pedigree that everyone should be proud of. Redfall's previous update will be its last as we end all development on the game. The game and its servers will remain online for players to enjoy, and we will make good offers to players who purchase the Hero DLC. Alpha Dog Studios. This studio will also close. We appreciate the team's creativity in bringing Doom to new players. Mighty Doom will be sunset on August 7th, and we will be turning off the ability for players to make any in-game purchases. Tango Gameworks will also close. We are thankful for their contributions to Bethesda and players around the world. Hi-Fi Rush will continue to be available to players on the platforms it is today. Roundhouse Games, the teams at Roundhouse Games will be joining ZeniMax Online Studios, ZOS. Roundhouse has played a key role in many of our recent games, launching and bringing them into ZOS to work on the Elder Scrolls Online will mean we can do even more more to grow in the world that millions of players call home. With all this consideration of our Bethesda studio teams so that we can invest more deeply into our portfolio of games and new IP, a small number of roles across select Bethesda publishing and corporate teams will also be eliminated. Those whose roles will be impacted will be notified today, and we ask that you please treat our departing colleagues with respect and compassion. We will provide our full support to those who are impacted in today's notifications and through their transitions, including severance benefits informed by local laws. These changes are not a reflection of the creativity and skill of the talented individuals at these teams or the risk they took to try new things. I acknowledge that these changes are also disruptive to the various support teams across ZeniMax and Bethesda that bring our games to market. We are making these tough decisions to create capacity to increase investment in our other parts of our portfolio and focus on our priority games. Bethesda remains one of the key pillars of Xbox with a strong portfolio of amazing... They keep using that word. Sorry to like break character for a second, but they just keep using that word. As we look to the future, there is an impressive lineup of games on the horizon. In 2024 alone, we have Starfield, Shattered Space, Fallout 76, Skyline Valley, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, and Elder Scrolls Online, Golden Road. As we align our plans and resources to best set ourselves up for success in this complex and changing industry, our teams across Arcane Lion, Bethesda Game Studio, id Software, Machine Games, ZeniMax Online Studios, and Bethesda Publishing, and our corporate teams will be well positioned to build new IP, explore new game concepts, and expand our existing franchises. Money, 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 money. Here's all the good things that we have coming out that we want to remind you is coming out, but you're probably soured on Bethesda Studios, ZeniMax, Microsoft, so who knows if you'll even play them because you know that your friend got cut from his job so they could work on this. Microsoft is a $3 trillion company. They lost billions of dollars on Xbox consoles. The state of gaming is in such a weird place. Video game companies have finally realized that movies and television make an obscene amount of money, and that's why we have a Mario movie, a Sonic movie, a Last of Us show, the Fallout show, which I will be the first to say is a phenomenal program. It is. But now we have this. I never played The Evil Within, and I just saw a clip of The Evil Within 2 where they look at the camera and like break the fourth wall completely, and I laughed out loud. Like, I laughed to the point where I think my neighbors heard it. Never played The Evil Within. I never played Hi-Fi Rush. I was honestly waiting for a physical copy of Hi-Fi Rush, but I don't think we're ever gonna get it, so I might go get it. But it's like, do you give the money in this direction or do you wait for another time later? I don't really know. It's really sad to see this. It's really sad to see this. A lot of people just lost their jobs. They're going to be given severance packages, and I don't know what that entails for them because, like it says in the thing, it's all based on local law. So if they base it on, you know, you're getting X amount of money or you're getting this amount of money, you're getting that, whatever, you know, you could have a little bit of money to live off of for a while, but it sucks to see. It sucks to see a bunch of people lose their jobs. It sucks to see people who are passionate about something just be stopped dead in their tracks. Redfall is a game that came out and then I never heard about it after its like first week or two. So you and I can probably surmise how much traction that game really got. Hi-Fi Rush, I was actually just, when I was reading the article before I read it now, I read it on my computer, I was on IGN directly, and it said they gave Hi-Fi Rush a 9. And I don't have it, I'm not going to be able to find it. I saw it on Twitter, I'm assuming it's someone who either worked on Hi-Fi Rush, or the studio that made Tango that made Hi-Fi Rush. It said, it was a picture of a bunch of awards that they had won, and it just said, not enough. And I was like, ugh. Some people are going to be able to keep their jobs. It's probably only the higher ups, most likely. And that sucks because there's probably a bunch of people that just started in the industry and now it's going to be even harder for them to find a job. And who knows where they're really going to work. Game companies are becoming this past like 12 months. It's currently, this is going to come out May, like the 11th, I think. May 11th, 2024 in the year of your Lord, and a lot of companies have shut down, a lot of doors have been closed. the industry is getting smaller and smaller, and it was already an incredibly tiny industry as it was. And it's really rough to see, man. Truly. In the comments below, let me know if your favorite studio, your favorite subsidiary studio is being affected by this. I'd really genuinely like to know, because I didn't play a lot of these games. I don't know why, though. Like, I really don't. Hi-Fi Rush, when it got announced, it seemed really interesting and I wanted to try it. But like I said, I was waiting on a physical. That's never going to happen. And like Evil Within, I didn't like horror games at the time, so I never picked it up. So if your favorite studio, your favorite game, Prey is heavily affected by this. Never played Prey. Don't know why. Couldn't tell you, but a lot of people praise Prey. And now, you know, there was a Twitter account that I saw that was like, Days Without Praise 2. And they were on like, I think it was Days Without Praise 2, or maybe it was like Days Without Praise 2. And then I don't know if Prey 2 is out. And it was like day 2000 and something. And they just said it's over in parentheses afterwards. So I guess they shut down the Twitter page, but let me know in the comments below if this has affected you. Cause I'd really like to know. Genuinely, I'd like to know, because I'd like to know now that these games are done, now that these studios are done, I genuinely like to know what I should go back and pick up. Cause I obviously missed something. So let me know. Now I really want to get into this week's lore. The past 2 weeks have been the trifecta, as I was been calling them. I don't know if I said it here, but I've been saying it in my brain space. The trifecta of our protagonists from the Fallout show. And today I'm not even going to beat around the bush. We have to talk about the third and final protagonist of our trifecta, Maximus. But before I can do that, I have to thank the Patreon. There's some names on screen. Look at them. Great, right? Even their names are, you know, good-looking names. Good-looking folks, too. The names on screen, we have to thank. Because of them, the show continues to get bigger and better and harder and faster and stronger. And they allow me to do other fun stuff. So here are these names. We have to thank them, starting at the top. We have to thank the OG Noah. Thank you, Noah. After Noah, I have to thank Marcus. Thank you, Marcus. After Marcus, I have to thank Mellow Milhouse. Thank you to Mellow Milhouse. After Mellow Milhouse, I have to thank Captain Lennox. Thank you to Captain Lennox. And last but certainly not least, I have to thank Danish Hound Dog. Thank you to Danish Hound Dog. Like I said, these fine folks whose names are on screen currently are a big reason for this show being the way it is, being able to grow, being able to try new things. And if you like the show, there's the $1 tier to the $10 tier. And at the $10 tier, you can hear these episodes get recorded live in our Discord. Usually it's on Wednesdays. Usually it's on Wednesdays. I don't know why I said it's at a Wendy's. It's usually on a Wednesday. Today, it's a Thursday. Time constraints. Ooh, boy. And I love you guys. Thank you for supporting. Thank you for hanging out. I love you. Now, like I said, this week is the final part of the trifecta. I have another trifecta that I want to talk about that's going to be in the Patreon. So if you'd like to hear any piece of Fallout lore, make sure you check out the Patreon, because once a week I ask a poll, and that poll, the results of it, your voice is heard in it, because from the $1 tier to the $10 tier, you can cast your vote in the poll and have your choice in what this week's lore is. And by way of the Ghoulman Entertainment Patreon, I bring you the lore on Maximus from Fallout on Prime, the Fallout TV show. And now I'm not going to lie to you. When I first saw that we were getting a story that was helmed by a Brotherhood of Steel, Squire, Knight, Aspirant, what have you, I was a little hesitant. Just because I feel like I've seen enough Brotherhood of Steel. I feel like the Brotherhood of Steel in the games should maybe take a break for a little while. I'm not saying don't be in it, but don't be the main driving force, right? But then when I saw Maximus in the show, I actually really liked him. Like, I really, really liked him. I liked his naivete. I liked his anger. I liked how, in my opinion, he's kind of the evil charisma character. Excuse me, the evil karma character. I liked him. His special stats, and this comes to us by way of Fallout Shelter, are a 7 in strength, a 6 in perception, a 6 in endurance, a 5 in charisma, a 4 in intelligence, a 7 in agility, and a 5 in luck. Maximus is desperate to believe in something, and he's kind of pathetic. Like, in my own opinion, he's just like, he's shoveling shit Literally. Like, he literally shovels shit. He's the clean trainer. He's the latrine cleaner. I might keep that in. And he wants to be more. He wants to be a lot more. He'll do whatever he can to further the Brotherhood of Steel and their missions because he genuinely believes them, because he thinks that's how he's going to get ahead. That's how he's going to make a name for himself in this wasteland. But at the same time, the entire impression that I get from Maximus is that he's doing this for his own personal gain. He doesn't really care if they're the good guys or the bad guys. Even in one of the last episodes, I believe it's episode 7, when Lucy says, but they're the Brotherhood, they're the good guys. Him and Thaddeus are like, it's kind of complicated. When Elder Cleric Quintus offers him a stake, saying that they're going to take the observatory, they're going to then rule the wasteland once they have the artifact, like, he's totally in on it because he only cares about him. Maximus only gives a shit about Maximus. I think, from what I see, he's weak and he knows it and he's scared about it. It's his biggest fear is how weak he is and how he understands that when you are a weak person, you can be desperate. And that's kind of what I think happens with Aspirant Dane, which we'll talk about in a bit. He understands that you have to lie, cheat, and use violence to get what you want throughout the Wastes. And it's not like it doesn't come from an area that he understands. Maximus was at Shady Sands when it got nuked. He hid in a refrigerator, in a milk vending machine, and survived the nuking and was saved by a Brotherhood of Steel knight, a fella in some powered armor. He would later be taken in under the knight and raised as a member of the Brotherhood, and later would be given the title of Aspirant. Now that I think about it, though, I don't think we saw any scribes. We saw squires. He becomes a squire. Dane becomes a squire. Thaddeus becomes a squire. I don't think we saw any scribes. Huh. I could be wrong on that, though. Dane is one of his only friends, Aspirant Dane, and they get the promotion to squire before Maximus does. I'm assuming there is a point where you just don't become a squire. You just train and train and train. That's never really explained in the show. But Dane gets squire and they all have a little bit of a party. They're all excited. They're all having a good time. And Maximus goes into just a fit of rage and breaks shit. And then the next morning when Dane puts their boot on, there's a razor in it and it seems like somebody had sabotaged Dane, cut up his Achilles tendon. And now they'll walk with a permanent limp for the rest of their life. And I've seen a lot of people genuinely think at the end of the series, when Dane is like, no, I did it to myself, I was afraid to go out there, they believe that. I don't. I genuinely believe that, and this is my own opinion, that maybe in season 2, I'll be proven wrong, who knows, but I genuinely believe that Maximus put that there because he's jealous. I don't think Maximus is a good person. Even like I'm going to state in a little bit when I go through every episode, he makes a pact with Lucy. She's willing to be his friend. She wants to be his friend, and he still lies to her. Maximus is not a good person. Yes, he saves her life on the bridge, but he just wants the artifact so he can go back to the Brotherhood and be a knight. He doesn't care about Lucy. Now, there is a fella named Thaddeus who I've spoken about briefly just a moment ago. Him and his cronies bully Maximus, but later on that does change and the tables kind of turn. Now, in episode 1, we get to see Maximus say that he joined the Brotherhood to hurt the people who hurt him. And this is one of the first things that I saw that made me kind of like turn on to what Maximus's story might be. I'm very much into the idea of a revenge plot, just someone who's kind of petty. And if Maximus is just like, people hurt me and I'm not okay with it, and they have to make, and I have to make them pay. They have to feel the 1/8 of an iota of what I feel. I absolutely get. Like, I love Last of Us 2 is one of my favorite games ever. I'll just say that real quick. I love a good revenge plot. I love a good story because you get to the revenge and you do what you've been trying to do and you realize I don't feel as good as I thought I was going to. And I can't wait to see that in his character. And like I said, this is the episode where you see Aspirant Dane get promoted and then the razor in the boot. He feels like he's being left behind. Like, I understand FOMO. I grew up in a small ass town and like all my friends were going off to do stuff, and there I was, just chilling, working. My buddy's going to like parties with Pusha T, and I'm just like, oh, that's cool. I want to do that. And like, I understand Maximus. Many people suspect Maximus of implanting the razor in the boot to the point where he's actually brought in to be interviewed by Elder Cleric Quintus. Maximus is intimidated into telling the truth, and he says he didn't do it, but he wanted it to happen, and ask if that's wrong. And the High Elder is like, yeah. Or the Elder Cleric is like, yeah. Yes. That's wrong. That's your friend, but also that's your brother. It's your brotherhood of steel compatriot. Maximus is trying to like get out of this in some way. And he starts thanking Quintus, and he thanks him for his guidance, a home, and a place in the world. And then Maximus says this line that I haven't heard like anybody talk about. And it bothers the shit out of me since I heard it. He goes, if I can help the Brotherhood make it better, Eden or whatever, even if it means giving my own life, I'll do it. And I'll be grateful for the Brotherhood for giving my life meaning. So when I first saw this scene, we're going to talk about this for a second. When I first saw this scene, my first thought was, okay, this is Fallout. What the fuck does Eden mean in this context? The word Eden means a lot in the Fallout universe. And on the wiki, there's a little annotation. I get all of my lore off of the Fallout wiki, the Nukapedia, if you will. Thank you to them. I love you. On the wiki, there's a little annotation for the word Eden, and I was super excited because that word has tripped me up. I have heard theories that the Brotherhood that we know in this universe got absolved into the Enclave. At least this sector of it did. There's other theories that I heard that the Brotherhood, because of their flags being red and gold, are now part of the Legion. So the theory I've heard is that Caesar's Legion won, and then out of the 80-something tribes Caesar already had, the 86 or 87 tribes, Caesar goes and conquers more, and one of them is the Mojave chapter of the Brotherhood and takes the entire Brotherhood under his reign, right? So Eden, John Henry Eden, and I looked it up because you could leave Raven Rock in Fallout 3, and I don't think Eden is necessarily dead, but you do blow up Raven Rock. But it says on the wiki that John Henry Eden dies sometime in 2277. The robotic, spoiler alert, the robotic AI president dies sometime in 2277. But he's a robot, he's not a people. So maybe his consciousness, maybe the AI that is Eden gets backed up onto some hollow disk, right? Maybe, who knows? But then there's also the Garden of Eden creation kit, the GEC. In Fallout 2 and Fallout 3, the main thing you're looking for, the MacGuffin, is the GEC. So now you have this thing, the GEC, that is brought up again, the word Eden, Garden of Eden creation kit, this word is brought up. So that was my other thought, is maybe they're looking for a GEC. Maybe with a GEC, they know that they can do something with it, right? And then I click on the little annotation on the wiki, and in Fallout Brotherhood of Steel 2, a canceled video game from the early 2000s, there was a settlement in southern Texas called New Eden. So are they just going to take things that weren't canon and now make it canon? Is Texas the home of the Brotherhood at this point? Is there a mecca of Brotherhood that it's in Texas and that's what Eden is? They just say, hey, like you go through these ranks, hopefully to one day reach Eden, and it's New Eden in Texas, like right on the border of Mexico. The wiki, I read it quick because it's not that much is there, but they talk about it as it was like a jungle. And it was Eden. It was a new place that they wanted to spread everything throughout the wastes. So that one line has made me think more than like anything else in the show. Like, because I that one word, and it's placed so perfectly where it could mean one of so many different things. After this conversation that they have, Maximus kind of speech checks him his way out of this, and then Elder Cleric Quintus gives him the pass, and he thanks him for being a good boy. And he then takes Squire Dane's position, and he becomes Squire Maximus, and Dane goes back to an aspirant. Dane does not believe that this was the doing of Maximus. And like I said, even at the end of the series, when Dane says, no, I did it, I think he's just covering for his friend. Dane says that they think it's one of the bullies and that Maximus wouldn't hurt a fly. And I think when we find out, if we find out that Maximus did this, it's going to hurt even more watching those scenes, knowing that, like, Doug, that's your one and only friend here. And that's what you did because you're jealous. In episode 2, this is where we get to see how the Brotherhood of Steel interacts with its underlings, if you will. This is where Squire Maximus is given to Knight Titus. There is a scene where Maximus is branded with Titus's T on his back because he belongs to him now in this weird pseudo-religious ceremony that they have. Because remember, the Brotherhood is supposed to be like a weird culty tech thing. They're going into the wildlands, the outlands. They're supposed to go to Philly and see if they can find a piece of the artifact that they're looking for from this enclave scientist who has escaped, who is Viltzik, which you've probably, if you've seen my other pieces of lore, you know who Viltzik is. Even if you've just heard about the show, he's the head. Titus, the knight who's in charge of him, immediately just tells him to wash his cod piece, his little penis protecting piece, on his T-60, and he gets bored flying and needs to kill something. And the two of them find Viltzik, the Enclave scientist's camp, and Titus makes Maximus look in a cave, even though Maximus does not have the weapons. He has, like, a pistol, and that's it, and then a bunch of stuff. And Titus is in T-60 with an assault rifle and just walks in. Excuse me, makes Maximus just walk in. And then they go into the cave, and eventually, Titus just gets messed up by a Yao Guai, and they start fighting back and forth, and Maximus does the final blow into the Yao Guai, and it slumps over, and then he just makes Maximus take his helmet off, and then we see that it's Michael Rapaport, which I thought was such a nice little surprise, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna die, oh, I'm dying, give me a stim pack, and he calls him a bunch of foul names, and then you find out that Titus doesn't even really care for what the Brotherhood is doing and is just kind of like, get me the hell out of here. I hate these people. I'm just here for the benefits. After Maximus refuses to give Titus a stim pack, Titus dies due to his injuries, and then he takes the power armor and his identity. So Maximus just becomes Knight Titus. As Maximus is trying to learn how to use the power armor, he's like kicking rocks and it's like destroying buildings because of how much power the power armor has. He finds the, what do I have here? He finds the chicken fucker and the snake oil salesman and breaks up a fight between them. Again, this is to show Maximus how strong the suit is, that he grabs a guy by the head and this guy is screaming for his life as he feels the pressure on his skull. By the time Maximus gets to Philly, the ghoul and Lucy are fighting over Viltzik, and Maximus and then Maximus and the ghoul have a super dope fight, but this also gives Lucy time to escape with Viltzik. Now in episode 3, Maximus's armor has been damaged by the ghoul. In the previous episode, he cut a valve right by the helmet and it sent him flying off. And he comes back to Philly. He's going back to Philly so he can find the repairs for the suit. And he gets a call on his power armor's radio from Petty Officer Shortsight, who radios to him saying that he missed check-in, he tells them that Maximus died fighting an abomination, and they offer to send another squire, and he says no because it would blow his cover, and then he destroys the comms unit on the power armor deliberately. Maximus goes back to the merchant Jamila, who works inside of Philly, to get his power armor part fixed, and she tells him he only has 4 caps and he's short a cap, and he sees the dentist/barber across the way, and he sells one of his teeth, and he gives her extra caps, and then she fixes it in seconds. It took her no time at all. She was doing something else. She, like, takes a little tool, goes zip-zap, and then she's done. Teeth are apparently a big deal here, because later, and we'll talk about it, Maximus gets shot with a tooth. Now, on his way back to go find the power armor to put the part into it, he leaves his power armor right outside of Philly's, and some raiders are trying to dismantle it. They beat him up. He tries to fight back. He grabs, like, a toilet seat cover and a pair of rusty tongs, and he hits the one dude a couple times, but they wind up, like, leaving him in a pretty bad shape. He winds up, like, putting one of his arms into the power armor and grabbing the head raider man, or at least the dude who's giving orders, and he squeezes his head until his brain explodes. The show does violence very well. Now, shortly after all this happens, a vertibird flies overhead because it's a new squire for Maximus. And who is it but Thaddeus, the dude who picked on Maximus since they were kids. He thought about, genuinely thinks about killing Thaddeus. He's like, I have all this power. This guy was a piece of shit to me. I could kill him. No one's going to stop me. I'll just say that he died again fighting an abomination. No one is going to try anything. And then he immediately makes him clean his codpiece the same way Titus did to him. He makes him look for apples in a dead tree. He just makes him do some humiliating stuff because he wants his revenge on the guy who picked on him his whole life. And also, Titus will tell Maximus that they are not the only ones looking for the target, and the Brotherhood of Steel told them to kill anyone who gets in the way. While tracking the ghoul's radiation, they find the body of Viltzig. And that's not something I thought about, but because the ghoul is irradiated, they can track radiation signatures from people, from things. The discussion is brought up, hey, maybe we should take the body. And then Max was like, no, if there's anything important, it would have been inside of his head. That's why his head is gone. Now, sometime after this, they sit down and they have a short rest. And Maximus is still Titus to Thaddeus. And he asks him to say something about Maximus. And he says positive things. Thaddeus is like, yeah, you know, he was all right. He was a good guy. But Maximus, again, as Titus, demands that he say something negative, and Thaddeus admits that he only picked on Maximus because he was picked on himself and wanted to redirect some of the hate to someone else. Thaddeus wishes he could have lived longer, Maximus could have lived longer, to do the same thing to somebody else. Max begins to soften up on him, and this is both a good and a bad thing, as you see in a future episode. They get to Hollywood Boulevard, they track the ghoul there, and they find the gulper that swallowed Viltzig's head. Max and Thaddeus begin to fight it, and Thaddeus gets swallowed up by the gulper. Maximus pulls Thaddeus out and makes the gulper's insides become outsides, and it's super dope. And they find the head, and then the dog, CX-404, just shows up for a minute, and the dog is just kind of there. And they have the head with the artifact inside of it. They then prepare to take the artifact back to the Brotherhood. Episode 4, the night of the gulper attack, they camp somewhere, they kind of chill out, they start passing stories, they become friendly, they start talking like they're friends. Thaddeus wants to be branded by Titus, and he still doesn't know that it's Maximus, and Maximus isn't okay with this, but you could see that Thaddeus really wants it, and he gives it to him, and he brands him. And then Maximus explains to him that he is Maximus and not Titus, and they get into an argument. Maximus tries to hurt him. All he winds up doing is really crushing Thaddeus' foot, and Thaddeus steals the fusion core out of the back of the power armor, Viltzik's head, and he leaves him there for dead. And he's like, screw you guys, I'm going home, because he thinks, now I'm going to have the artifact, I'm going to bring it back, I'm going to tell them what kind of a traitor this is, because he killed a man, and then took his power armor, took his identity, pretended he was him, and then, you know, he's kind of just a piece of shit. The next morning, rad roaches begin to crawl all over Maximus in the power armor, trapped, and Lucy finds him killing the roaches. He begs Lucy to free him, but at this point, she doesn't trust anybody. During a discussion on why he should be trusted, Lucy begins to vomit, and Max explains that she probably has radiation poisoning. He explains that he has Radaway, he just needs to get out of the suit to access it. She still doesn't trust him. He explains that they'll both die if he's trapped in the suit. She asks his name. He lies and says, Titus. Dick. You're a liar. I just hate lying. Like, in real life, I can't stand lying. She frees him. She lets him go. During Lucy's recovery downtime from the Radaway, she comments on his T-60 power armor and that she knows that they were used during the Battle of Anchorage pre-war. They talk a little bit about what happens in vaults, and Maximus is like, I didn't know anybody even lived in there. And Lucy's like, yeah, there's just normal people. Her exact quote, are regular folks like me. And she's like, what did you think was down there? Maximus thought that there were monsters that lived in the vaults. He's very, like, dumb. And I don't mean dumb because he's stupid. I mean dumb because he wasn't educated. When Lucy asks to have sex with him in like two episodes from now, he says, and I hate that I'm going to have this on a recording, but he says, do you want to make my cock explode? Like at one point, and like she's like, "What do you mean you want to make my cock explode?" Like, you know, one of the goop comes. It's gross. To double down on his lying, he even says that his squire stole something that belongs to the Brotherhood. It doesn't even explain what he's looking for. He's just using Lucy because it's something that's next to him. While they walk down this is probably one of the best scenes in the series. They start walking down this everything's abandoned, it's the apocalypse, but this railway, Lucy starts asking about what has happened in the past 200 years, and Maximus doesn't even really know. She knows all the pre-war history, but she doesn't know anything that's happened since the bombs have fallen. They continue to talk. They talk about the head. They keep saying, Maximus even brings up, no one even knows what's in the head. And Lucy's like, yeah, that's kind of like the point. And they bring up just what being in a vault is like and what the world is for in their experience to them. And then in my favorite scene from the entire show, next to when we see Roger the Ghoul, they're walking down this bridge and you see these fiends and they're like, we don't have weapons. And Maximus and Lucy are like, we don't have weapons. And they're like, I think Lucy's like, how do we know they're not lying? And they're like, they probably are. We have weapons. And we just told them we don't have weapons. Lucy's like, what if we just put our hands up and we walk across the bridge together and we pass each other? You think that'll work? And then they're like, yeah, sure, let's try it. And they put their hands up and they just start playing Ladyfingers, which is like, it's such a good scene, man. They get to a certain point where the fiends see Lucy's Pip-Boy and they go to shoot her. And Maximus, with his quick reaction, grabs the gun out of Lucy's holster, pops him twice. He gets a graze, but he kills the two fiends, the two raiders. It's such a beautiful scene. And then after this, they find the town, the village of Shady Sands. And if you're a longtime Fallout fan, you understand that Shady Sands holds a very important place in the lore of this universe. This is where the NCR begins. This is where one of the first civilizations begins to thrive and prosper. There's a big sign. It says 35,000 people live there. There's a library. There's a bunch of stuff that would signify people existing and doing the right thing, trying to carry on humanity. The politics of the NCR are a complete other thing, but still, hear me out. Lucy believes in Reclamation Day. She's explaining this to Maximus. And they see that the entire place is a crater. And Lucy's like, well, if they couldn't do it, how could we have? And Maximus even says, he's like, everybody wants to save the world. We just all have different ideas of how we should do it. A quick reminder, New Vegas is still canon. Remember how I said Maximus gets grazed by a bullet? Well, he starts losing a lot of blood and Lucy notices it. So they try to find something to help him. And they find the Hawthorne Medical Laboratories, which Hawthorne Medical is a subsidiary of Vault Tech, and they find a trap door to Vault 4. And they fall down this little trap, and then Maximus is like, where are we? And Lucy's like, the best place in the world, a vault. When we see them in the next episode, they're in Vault 4. They're recovering. The doctors of Vault 4 have patched up Maximus. They can't believe it's a tooth that they used to shoot him with, and that he's going to need a couple of days to heal. Lucy's enthralled to be there, and Birdie, who's not the overseer, but definitely someone with influence from the above world, gives Maximus a suite, gives him his own little house, she gives him oysters and caviar, and he takes a shower, and she's trying to entice him to be there, but Lucy, this is the point when they're in the doctor's office, that Lucy offers to have sex with Maximus. Such a reserved individual, such a person who just hasn't seen much of the outside world, that it seems almost as if he was made to fear using his privates, his genitals, because he doesn't really understand how it works. And Lucy's just kind of like, all right, okie dokie. Now, Maximus just got done saying that he feels like all of the vault, or he thought all of the vaults would have monsters in them. And while him and Lucy are eating breakfast in Vault 4, he notices that everybody has like some weird ass mutation and that they're not allowed to go to level 12. Chris Purnell, Overseer Ben, makes it very obvious. You're not allowed to go to level 12. They also tell him that they found his power armor that he left at the train station where Thaddeus abandoned him, and they brought it back. Now, this is when he goes to the generator room to get a fusion core so he could put it in the back of the power armor, and Birdie approaches him. I think she kind of knows what's going on. Like, it's she, if she does know, she plays stupid, which I think she does. And she's like, hey, why don't you go check out the room? We want you to stay here. And it's got all the good stuff that I was telling you about. Snacks, sugar bombs, television, everything. Lucy comes to like find him during this time. And she's like, we got to get out of here, because she found that in level 12, which you're not allowed to go to, they were performing experiments on humans. And he says to her, we should do the nasty. And she's like, what are you talking about? We got to get out of here. And then they go through this whole ritual with Lucy. And then Maximus goes and steals the fusion core, puts it in the power armor, and then goes to the ritual where they're trying to... It seems like they're going to kill Lucy, but they actually just go to let her free. It's very funny. Chris Parnell really knocks it out of the park with that one. He then like beats the shit out of a bunch of people to the point where one dude is like, his chest is caved in. And I believe Maximus is even like, check on that dude. I think he might be internally bleeding. They then leave Vault 4. After this has all happened with them in there, Lucy's like, yo, you can't take the fusion core. We have to give it back. Lucy's like, if my dad found out that I killed an entire vault to come find him, he's going to be a little perturbed. And he listens, and he throws the power core back down the same chute that they fell into Vault 4. Lucy then will be like, hey, Max, you're great, and you're the best person I've met out here, and I really appreciate who you are, and you should come live with me in Vault 33 when we go back. And then Maximus is like, hey, just so you know, my name isn't Titus, it's Maximus. He's like, I let him die, and I didn't do anything to help. And he even says he's not a good person. Like, he admits to not, he doesn't say those words exactly, but he admits to not being a good person. And Lucy uses the excuse that she was only in the wasteland for 2 days and she threw acid on a man's face when she was in
Vault 4.
She's not going to let someone's past identify them for who they are if she sees good in somebody. Lucy had put a tracking device in the nose of Viltzig's head, and they can track the head to this radio station where Thaddeus is. And it's one of the best pieces of dialogue, because they're talking about fiddle music, and it's Fred Armisen, and I'll watch anything with Fred Armisen, but they let him have a good time with this one. And he's like, oh yeah, this is great. I love this fiddle music. And then Thaddeus goes to shoot at Maximus and Lucy and misses all of the shots. And they see the Brotherhood coming, and they see that he has the head, and Maximus is like, we can't allow them to get it. They're not the good guys. Like how Lucy's like, they're the good guys. Or no, not really. It's kind of a complicated thing. So he gives Lucy the head and tells her to run off. And he takes one of the corpses, because around the radio station where Fred Armisen lives is a bunch of bodies. And they cut the heads off of some of them. And he smashes the face in and then brings that back to the Brotherhood, who has now taken Philly and is like, hey, this is the head. This is where Maximus and Lucy share a kiss as they leave. Personal opinion time, not something that was needed. I'm not a huge fan of characters falling in love. It's not that I have anything against it. It just feels like, oh, this is going to happen. She has lady bits and he has fella parts. And, you know, they're going to put them together at some point. Like, I'm just so tired of that cliche. And she tries to reassure him that at some point in time, don't know when, they'll meet again. And he is welcome to come stay with them in 33. Maximus is then flown to Philly, where the Brotherhood of Steel have completely taken over. They moved in like they own the place. And he's brought before Quintus, the elder cleric Quintus, and he's like, you're wearing Titus's clothes. We were told you were dead. Why have we been lied to? And then they take the head, the fake head, and they scan it, and they find out that there's no artifact there, and they go to put him to death. They put a gun to the back of his head, and he's begging for his life. He's like, I could take you to the artifact, I promise you. If you spare my life, I can take you to it. I promise. And even Dane is like, he didn't cut my leg up. I did it because I was afraid to go out to the wilds, which, again, I don't think is true. I think we're going to find out next season that it's not. And I think it's going to make that scene hurt even more. So Maximus and Quintus go and have a private talk, and they ask, what were the circumstances of Titus's dying? And Maximus is like, he died running. He didn't stand up for what he believed in. He died not facing the enemy. And Quintus is just pissed, but he's also like, we used to rule the wasteland, and with the artifact we can, and you and I can rule the wastes and give new life.
to a new sect of Brotherhood of Steel.
Once they have the relic, he believes genuinely all of this and tries to, like, really shove it into Maximus's face. And he's like, hey, man,
you've always been looking for purpose.
Manifest that destiny now. While preparing for the battle at the Griffith Observatory, he runs into Dane, and Dane explains that he is now to be fighting in this battle for punishment for hurting himself. And this is where Maximus starts to tell Dane that he met somebody, that he met Lucy McLean, and that he's going to go live with them when this is all over in the vault. When they touch down on the Griffith Observatory, Maximus is seen shooting at least one NCR remnant, and Lee Moldaver, who is the person looking for the artifact who is part of the NCR, comes out, and it's not seen who actually shoots her, but she's out there. He does what he has to do, and he eventually gets to the room where Lucy Moldaver, Lucy's mom, and Hank are, and at this point, he doesn't know that Hank is a monster. He just sees other guy in a vault suit and shoots the lock on the cage and lets him out. He tries to get Lucy to go with him to escape the battle and take the Hank, Lucy's dad, with her. But she's like, I'm not going with him. He's a monster. He's a piece of garbage. He glassed over Shady. And then he goes to attack Hank, knowing that he could have killed him. And Hank, now in power armor, because power armor walked through the door without a head, and he took the body out and got in it himself, attacks him, he punches him, he knocks him out completely, and he's out cold. By time he gets back up, Moldaver's already entered the room, taken the cold fusion, put it into the piece of equipment, and started it. And she's sitting in the chair, bleeding out dead, holding the hand of Rose McLean, and he's the only person that's in there. Lucy left, Hank left, the ghoul left, everybody's gone. And he's waking up, and they rush in and they say, Maximus has killed Moldaver. And they hold his hand up and they say, all hail Knight Maximus. I don't know how they knew he was just going to be a knight all of a sudden, but now he's a knight all of a sudden. He doesn't come across as being too pleased with this. I think he genuinely thought he was going to go live with Lucy in the vault. And he's just, now he's Knight Maximus. And this is the life that he will lead. He will continue to lie through his teeth to get higher and higher up in the ranks. That's all we pretty much have on the lore of Season 1 Maximus. I have a feeling a lot of my theories will be debunked, and I have a feeling some of my theories might even be proven, or at least partially proven, in Season 2. Maximus is a really, really, really neat character. Like I said, when I first saw that the show was going to focus on a Brotherhood of Steel character, I was a little hesitant. I also thought he was going to be more of a main character, and I'm happy that he kind of wasn't backseat, but maybe, you know, second fiddle. It's really hard to say who's the main character between Lucy and the ghoul. I'm real partial to a female protag, but I love Lucy McLean, dude. I really do. I think she's such a good character. She's fun. She's entertaining. I like watching her. I really, really like her. But Maximus feels like someone who's lived in the wastes. Sheltered, but lived in the waste. Let me know who's your favorite of the big three in the comments below. I hope you enjoyed, because that is this week's lore. Ladies and germs. Ladies and germs. Boys and ghouls. How you doing? What's going on? Hey guys, just a quick update, little housekeeping for you. Next week will be an episode, regular episode. The week after that, if I am correct, which I think I am, is not. It's going to be a burner episode. I have family coming in town, and I don't want to, I have to pick them up, when I normally record this or edit this, I have to pick them up. So I just don't feel like working while they're here. I can't really move my schedule around. So you're going to get a movie review from me and Papa Kyle. And I hope you guys enjoy that. Let me know what you're playing. I'm kind of in a spot where I want to play a lot of new stuff. I am doing my Fallout 4 playthrough right now. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to really sit down and play in a minute. It's still fun. Don't get me wrong. I just haven't had a chance to play. I'm really looking for a set of XO1 power armor. I really want to build that bad bitch out. Really just feel like Frank Horrigan for a little while. But now that all these Microsoft Studios, these Bethesda ZeniMax Studios have shut down, I kind of want to go back and play those backlogs just because, you know, I feel like I missed out on some stuff. And there's probably some gems. There's probably some great stuff that I just totally missed out on. I know that there's Acclaim stuff in there. I really want to play Hi-Fi Rush. I'm really curious. It's a rhythm game. But I want to see how it plays because I'm very used to playing games with like headphones on, not because I'm listening to them, because I'm listening to something else. So I really want to see how that's going. There's this game that I really want to play called One Crab's Treasure. It has an accessibility mode in it where you just get a gun. You're a hermit crab with a gun. It's like a Dark Souls game, but they give you a gun. So you can just like, mow through enemies. I want to do one like normal. I've never played a Dark Souls game. So I want to do, like a regular schmegular playthrough where it's just, okay, this is how you do it. This is what you do, whatever, whatever. And then the next playthrough is just the gun playthrough. Where you just shoot everything. It just seems like a good time. But let me know. There's a lot of stuff I want to play. There's this hyper mech cat ball game that looks kind of cool. It's an indie game. I watched a streamer who I really enjoy their stuff play it. He seemed like he had a good time. It's like a roguelite, which I'm not huge on, but I think I'm getting to the age where all I really have time for is roguelites because I sit down to play Fallout for an hour and I go, I didn't do a thing. I moved 3 pieces of furniture in my camp and it's time for Betty Buys. Good night. So I want to know what everybody's playing, especially if it's something that I can pick up casually, I could play casually, I could pick up, put down. That's why I love Cult of the Lamb on my Switch, which I just read today that we should be getting some news about whatever Nintendo's next console is sometime early next year. But I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. My name has been Vince. This has been Atomic Radio. I've only done this 305 times. This has been Atomic Radio Hour, episode 305. In the description below are links to my Twitter, the show's Twitter, and Kyle's Twitter. Also, check out the Patreon. If you like the show, some cool perks down there. Also, there is the Discord you can check out. I'd really appreciate it if you joined. The intro music is, I can't believe I forgot this. This is the way I'm supposed to start it. The intro music is by the one and only Shane Ivers. It's called Feather Duster, where you can get all of his free music at silvermansounds.com/free music. I hope you guys are having a great week. I love you. Thanks for sticking around. And I'll be seeing you next week. Bye, everybody. Love you.
Atomic Radio Hour Podcast.
This has been a production made by your friends at Ghoulman Entertainment.